Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Hey, come on. Can we give God some praise in church? Hey, it's okay to have some fun. Come on, man. I'm so glad that you're here. Y'all can go ahead and take your seats. Let's go, dude. Man, I love 11:30. I've been joking with 8:30 and 10. Man, they love to take their seats. It's like their favorite part of the service. They're like, as soon as we get up here, they're sitting down. But I rock with y'all because y'all are like, nah, I'll stand up with you as long as you want me to. So I appreciate y'all. But hey, if we haven't had the chance to meet yet, my name is Campbell. I get the opportunity of being on our staff team here and get to do a couple different things. But what I'm excited about today is I get to serve on our communication team. And Pastor Trey has actually encouraged me to write. I'm preaching, obviously, today, and then I'm preaching next Sunday as well. And Pastor Trey encouraged me to write these talks for young people, for students and young adults, because my role here, it's long, so I'm just going to tell you. I'm the student and college and young adult director. Basically, what that means, if you're between the ages of 12 and 29, I'm your guy. 29-year-olds act like 12-year-olds way more than you think they would, so it's actually not that different. But so if you know any young people, if you are a young person and have some friends that maybe want to check out church, you could invite them next week. I think, you know, it'd be a great time for them to check it out, try us out, because, you know, the talk's written with them in mind. And I'm really excited about today. And as I was thinking about today and thinking about prepping for this talk, I thought about how I'm not really an outdoors guy. Like, you may be able to look at me and be like, yeah, we know. But I'm not really like an outdoorsy guy. Like, I'm not really like the guy that's going to go on a hike, you know? Like, I've never really understood that. Like, why would I drive somewhere, get out of my car, walk like a mile and a half, look at something, turn around, and then walk the same thing back? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, if I'm walking anywhere, I'm going to be walking to, like, get a coffee or, you know, walking to, like, get food. You know, that's the only type of hiking I'm interested in. And I've kind of always been that way. Like, I never really went to, like, summer camp growing up. Didn't really like to be outside. Kind of like to stay inside. And there was always one thing, though, that was somewhat outdoorsy that I was always kind of really interested in, and that was horse riding. I've loved animals ever since I was younger. Like, my TikTok, if you scroll through it, is just all, like, dogs and, like, different animals and, like, zoos posts and stuff. And when I was younger, both my grandpas were actually involved with horses. So my mom's dad, he actually helped train Tennessee walking horses. He's in Alabama. They would compete all across the Southeast. And then my dad's dad actually owned a farm with a bunch of cattle and crops, and he had horses as well. And so I was always fascinated by them, but I never really had the opportunity to really ride them until I got older. And so I was about 5 or 6 years old. I can't really remember exactly, but I went to my dad's farm, my grandpa's farm, and he had just gotten some new horses. They were trained. He was like, hey, why don't y'all, you know, ride them? And so we went to the barn, got on the horse, and he has a pond that we would take laps around, and that was kind of where we would ride the horses. And so I'm on the horse, he's walking with me around the laps, and we do it for like 30 to 45 minutes, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, in my mind, I look like a cowboy from like the westerns that my grandpas love to watch, and I was like, man, I look sick. This is awesome. I'm going to ride horses like for the rest of my life. And so as we get to the inn, I'm having so much fun that I ask my grandpa if I can take a lap by myself. So again, I'm like 5 or 6 years old. He probably should have said no. He said yes. And so he lets me take a lap around the lake by myself with this horse. And so I'm taking the lap by myself around this lake with the horse, and we get about halfway through, and I wish I could remember what happened, but I don't. And basically, something spooked the horse. The horse starts to kind of veer off to the side and gets a little anxious, so I pull back on the reins trying to take control, which if you've ever ridden a horse, you know that's like the last thing you want to do. So I pull back the reins super hard, trying to take control of the horse. The horse freaks out, loses his mind, starts sprinting full head as fast as he can, full speed as fast as he can, straight ahead. So he's sprinting full speed, fast ahead, as you know, fast as he can. And, you know, I don't have a ton of muscle now. I didn't have a ton of muscle when I was 5. And so I couldn't really hang on to the horse. And so I started to fall off the horse. And I fall off the horse, hit the ground, and fall into the pond. And so I did not ride a horse again, you know, for a long time. I was terrified of horses. And I share that, and I thought about it because I think, you know, I wish that was the only time in my life that I tried to take control of the reins in a situation in my life. But I think a lot of us, if we're honest, there's a lot of situation in our lives where maybe something doesn't look like it should, or we get confused, or we feel like we're losing control. So we start to take the reins and grab control. Just like how I was like, man, the horse should not be running this fast. I need to do something. I think we do the same thing in our life. And I do it all the time. And so today, I kind of want to start off a little differently. I want to give you my main point first, and we're going to make a trade. I'm going to trade you the main point, and you're going to trade me your attention for the next 20 minutes. Is that cool? All right, so we're going to make the trade. So here's the trade. All right, you can't take it back. Here's the main point. We don't have to manufacture what God is building. We don't have to manufacture what God is building. And I think young people specifically, I think this is so easy because we feel pressure from a bunch of different places to be something, to do something, and we can kind of take control and force things to happen, force opportunities to come up, whatever it is. But oftentimes when we do that, nothing really good happens. And so today we're going to talk about calling and purpose, which are two buzzwords. And so you may not really fully understand what those means. We just kind of throw those around. So I actually want to give you a definition that will help us. And that is calling and purpose is what God is building right where you are. And so my goal today is I'm not going to give you the job that you're going to be doing for the next 50 years because I don't know that. You know, I'm not God. But hopefully today what you do see is the purpose and the calling you can live out within your current situation. Because I promise you, whether you realize it or not, God is building something right where you are. And you can take steps now to be a part of it. And so today we're going to be learning about somebody new in the Bible. His name is Nehemiah. And Nehemiah lives in, you know, the Bible is in two parts. It's the Old Testament and the New Testament. And Nehemiah lived in the Old Testament. And so this was following this nation called Israel, who God had chosen to tell all the other nations about him. And so where we find Nehemiah is he's actually in what is called exile. And so somebody had come to Israel, taken over, and then brought everybody to their own country. And so he's in a country called Persia, and that's where we find him. So we're going to read a lot of Bible today, okay? We read a lot of Bible. I need you to lock in. So I need you to look at your neighbor, say, neighbor. No, seriously, I'm going to make y'all participate, so you have to participate. Look at your neighbor, say, neighbor. I need you to lock in. All right, now look at your other neighbor. Say, other neighbor. I didn't choose you because I trust you. All right, here we go. All right, here we go. Reading, let's go. Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1. In the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa, that's not citadel in Charleston, that's different, Hanani, one of my brothers. All right, so this is Nehemiah talking. So one of his brothers, right, they traveled, here, let's keep reading, came from Judah with some other men. So one of his brothers went with some other men to visit Israel, right? And Nehemiah questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. And so when Nehemiah was alive, the nation of Israel had been out of their country for about 140 years. And so Nehemiah had never seen it before. And so what he does is his brother goes, he asks them what he saw because he's curious. He's probably heard stories. He's probably heard about what this land looks like. So he wants to know what's going on. And so the next verse, this is how they respond. Those who survived the exile and are back in the province, those who survived and are back in the city are in great trouble and disgrace. Why? Well, it keeps saying, the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. Now, this is a really big deal. So everybody who's back in the city, back in those days, it was just a lot more like chaotic. And so you could get attacked pretty much at any time. And so for the city to not have a wall or a gate would leave them extremely susceptible to enemies, to people trying to take over. And so they were in a really dangerous spot. And what is really tough about this is Jerusalem at one point was a really successful and thriving city. But now it doesn't look anything like the city Nehemiah has probably heard about. And so that's devastating. Nehemiah must have been like, man, I have heard about so many amazing things that the city has done. But this version of the city that my brother and his friends are telling me about, that's not the city I've heard of. And so this is how Nehemiah responds. He says, when I heard these things, I sat down and I wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. So Nehemiah's heart is broken. Man, he's heard all these stories about this great city of Jerusalem, and it's supposed to be beautiful and like this like dedication to God, but it doesn't resemble that at all. It's broken. And I think we could easily read this and just put ourselves in this situation and be like, yeah, if my hometown, I'm from Nashville, if Nashville was destroyed, I'd be devastated. That'd be awful. But more than that is happening. See, God is putting something on Nehemiah's heart. And God is putting something on Nehemiah's heart because he wants this city to be rebuilt, and he needs a leader to go rebuild it. And so something deeper is happening, and I think a lot of times when we think about purpose in our life, Nehemiah's understanding his purpose is maybe to go rebuild this temple or this city. But for us, I think we want God to tell us our purpose through a burning bush like he did with Moses, Or we want God to tell us our purpose through writing us a letter, sending us in the mail, and we read it, and we're like, okay, this is my purpose. But a lot of times, we find our purpose through what breaks our heart. That's exactly what happens with Nehemiah. His heart is broken over this city, and he says, man, I need to do something about it. And so for you, that could look like a bunch of different things. Whatever it is that breaks your heart and you want to do something about, that might be part of your purpose in life, is to help contribute to the solution of that thing. And so once you kind of think about that and figure that out and spend some time later, not right now, but later, and you're like, okay, I know what my purpose is. I feel confident in it. What do I do? Well, this is what Nehemiah does. So the first thing he does is he prays. And he says, Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. And so he's praying to God. He's like, man, would you please hear me? Please hear me. I have something to ask you. And then he says, give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. And so he asked God to give him favor in the presence of a man. But what man? Well, he keeps saying, he says this, I was cupbearer to the king. Now, this is really important. So what a cupbearer would do, that was a job where they used to taste anything that the king was going to eat or drink. And they did that to make sure the food or the drink wasn't poisoned. And so whoever was in this job was basically, in a way, sacrificing themselves every day to make sure that the drink and the food wasn't poisoned so the king didn't die. And the reason this is such a big deal is because the cupbearer would have been really close with the king. Because think about it. If the cupbearer is to taste something that the king is about to eat, he's not going to always be in another room and then like not really know when to be around the king. No, he's going to spend pretty much all of his time with the king. And so Nehemiah had proximity to the person who could help him reach his goal and reach his purpose. And what I want you to see is we don't have to manufacture what God is building. Because Nehemiah, even though he might not have known his purpose at the time, God had been preparing him for his purpose his whole life. And he got him in this role because he knew Nehemiah needed to be close to the only guy who could help him reach his purpose. Because remember, we talked about it. Israel is in exile. What does that mean? It means that they had been conquered by a king, right? This dude's the king of Persia. His country had taken over Israel. So he needs his permission to go and rebuild the city. So he needs to be close to him. So Nehemiah prays, he understands where he's going, and then this is what happens next. So Nehemiah tells us, in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, so this is the king, King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought to him, so remember, his job is when wine, food is brought to him, he taste tests it, so that's what he does. He takes the wine and he gives it to the king, and Nehemiah says, I had not been sad in the king's presence before. Now this is wild. Nehemiah was so good at his job that his boss noticed when he was sad coming to work. I don't know about you. I love my job. Sometimes I'm sad coming to work, you know? But for him, it was so out of the norm because he was so good. He was so dedicated. And I want us to see that our calling does not exempt us from our current situation. Because I think a lot of times, especially as young people, we're like, man, I feel like God has so much for me. You know, I can't wait for this thing in the future. So I'm just kind of going to ignore or minimize my job, my role, my stuff right now. But that's not what Nehemiah does, because Nehemiah understood, man, if I am here right now, God has a purpose, God has a plan for my current situation, so I'm going to give it everything that I have. And man, the same needs to be true for us, is in the middle of wherever we are right now. Even if it's not where you want to head, it's not where you're going, God could be preparing you for something. He could be giving you skills that you need, or he could be putting you around people that could help. That's what he's doing with Nehemiah. He knew Nehemiah needed the king's help. And so the king notices, and he asks him a question. He says, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. So again, Nehemiah was so good at his job that the king noticed when he was sad. And this is how Nehemiah responds. So Nehemiah says he was very much afraid. So the reason he was afraid is because he was asking basically to go rebuild a city that the king already destroyed. And so he's like, well, if I wanted to keep it, why would I have just not destroyed it in the first place? So Nehemiah is risking his life because if the king got frustrated, he could have him killed. But he says to the king anyway, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? So he's like, why would I not be sad? This place that I've heard about that I had so much hope in going back in one day doesn't exist anymore. I'm devastated. And he's honest and direct with the king because here's the thing. When you really understand your purpose and calling and the direction your life is heading in, man, it gives you boldness to really live that out. And really trust that God is going to be with you in the middle of it. So you will do things that are scary. And you will do things that are hard. Because you trust that ultimately the direction you're going is what God has for you. And so the king responds, what is it you want? And dude, this is a hack right here. So Nehemiah says he prayed to the God of heaven. Man, if we could learn to pray in the middle of conversations, that would save us so much hurt and it'd be so helpful. This is a little tidbit. And he says, and I answered the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, remember, he prayed for favor earlier from God, so this is a big deal. He says, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. So he asked to go back to Jerusalem, asked to go back to the city and to rebuild it. And because he trusted God with the job that he was in, God placed him next to the guy who could help him, and he was faithful and he was good at his job and he didn't quit. Man, he got permission to go to Jerusalem, but not only that, he got a team of people to help him. He got an army from the king to protect him, and he got transportation to get him there faster. He got way more than what he asked for. All he asked for permission was to get there. I don't think he had a plan. I think he was like, I'll walk, whatever, however long it takes. He got way more than he asked for because he was faithful with what was in front of him. And so this is what happened. So they go, they travel, they see Jerusalem, and it's way worse than they think it was. So he says to his team, you see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. And so he just calls it how it is. He's like, man, it's worse than I thought. It's actually bad. The gates are destroyed. Everything was burned. Man, the city's falling apart. And I think the key to really pursuing your purpose really is this, is just we must confront the facts of what we're dealing with. I think a lot of times as Christians, we like to sugarcoat or be like, yeah, you know what, it's tough, but God's got us and, you know, trusting God, right? And like he's going to deliver all this stuff. But I think sometimes it's really important just to call it how it is. And that's what Nehemiah does. He's like, man, this situation is hard. This city is destroyed. We're going to have to totally rebuild this thing. And I think we have to do that when pursuing our purpose, because if we're not honest with the facts of what we're confronting, we're not going to have a proper understanding of the situation. We won't know, like, hey, this is actually the things that are wrong. Here's what we need to fix, and here's the steps we need to take. And so he's clear about it. And he's not just clear about it, but he gets the people behind it. He says, come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace. So he tells the team, he's like, man, come on. I know it looks bad, but let's do it. Let's do it together. And he says, I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. So he tells them, hey, God is with us. We can do this. And they reply, well, let us start rebuilding. And so they began this good work. Everybody say good work. Let's go. All right. So this is important. So he has a team. He casts clear vision. He's like, I know it's hard, but we can do this. And the team gets behind him. And when we have clear direction and purpose, or we have clear direction of our purpose and calling, I think what's really exciting is it involves other people. And it should, because the math of collaboration is multiplication. When we work together, the end product multiplies and we can reach way more people than we could alone. And so we should want to work with other people and invite other people into it. But sometimes this can be hard. It can be hard to invite people into what we feel like is our purpose and our calling, because what if they get credit? What if, you know, they get seen as, you know, more valuable because their job in this? But ultimately, if we have a true understanding of where we're headed, man, we don't care about any of that. And I think I'm not trying to get a raise when I say this. Like, I really mean this. But Pastor Trey is so good at this. He's so good at this. Let me explain that. So I know some of y'all are like, man, I wish Pastor Trey was preaching. Why is Campbell up here, right? I get that. I know that's a real feeling. But think about it. I'm 26 years old. This is a big opportunity for me to get to preach 3 services on back-to-back Sundays. There's very few churches in America, really, that would trust a 26-year-old with that responsibility. But not only does it give Pastor Trey rest, it gives me valuable opportunities to grow in a gifting or a calling that I might have so I can one day, you know, continue to lead and be that. And the same for April and the same for Terry. And also, we can't make Sunday morning happen without each other. Like, we can't make it happen without the security team keeping everybody safe from the moment you drive onto a property. We can't do it without the greeters saying, hey, even though I know you feel awkward when you walk by them. We can't do it without the ushers seating you, without the kids team looking after our kids and developing them, with our students team who love students so well that they know the church is always there for them, without production in the back and Pete turning on my mic and the worship team doing an amazing job with what they do. Like, we can't do it without each other. That's what church is. So, man, I would really encourage you, man, if you have the opportunity, if you're willing and able, we would love for you to get involved in church. And I'm not just talking about turning up to church on a Sunday and attending. Like, that's great, and I get it. Sometimes I wish I could just do that and go to brunch afterward. Like, that'd be dope. But I also know that's not what's best for me. I know what's best for me is to be surrounded by community and to invest in the younger generation. I know that's what's best for me. And so, man, talking about communicating a need and collaborating, dude, we have a ton of young adults here at this church. I don't know if you know this, but we do not have enough leaders. Like, we don't. And it's becoming an issue. Like, me and my wife, we just physically can't care for everybody. Like, we can't. And so we need more older adults who have free time and have lived some life. And so if you're an older adult, like older than 29, you have free time and you've made some mistakes, I'd love to talk to you. Because here's the thing. I think so often we expect we need to be perfect or ready to take a step. But, dude, you're never going to be perfect. And if you're perfect, I don't want you, to be totally honest with you. And if you're waiting to be ready, you're never going to be ready. And so, seriously, we would love you to take a step. You can come talk to me right there. We'll get you plugged in. Take no time. I promise. And you could really make an impact on a younger generation. I don't have to tell you. Young people are so lost. I don't have to tell you that. And I'm not just meaning lost, like, in a spiritual sense, but just, like, the world is hard. It is. It's a complicated, confusing place. We need older adults to pour into the younger generation so that they have somebody who helps them get through stuff. And we can collaborate and work together, and who knows the impact that can make, right? And what I also love about Nehemiah is he stays in the middle of the work the whole time. And when we're really pursuing our purpose and our calling, we'll stay in the work the whole time. Because God's hand was on Nehemiah, and Nehemiah's hand was on the work. The whole time, all throughout this book, he's constantly in the middle of getting the wall finished and making sure everything's good. He's always in the middle of it. So the goal with our purpose isn't to one day be like the manager who's in charge of everything, but really to be hands-on, making sure the mission gets accomplished. But what's tough about accomplishing the mission is you're probably going to encounter some people who are doubters and who don't believe in the work that you're doing, who might not believe in you, who just might not see the vision that you're seeing. And this happens with Nehemiah. Here's a couple of guys who are seriously, like, who are actual hecklers. Like, they stand at the bottom of the wall and just, like, heckle Nehemiah the whole time he's building the wall. I'm like, that's, like, generational level hate watching, right? Like, it's crazy. And so he's doing this. He's building the wall, and at some point, he has to answer, and this is what he says. He says, I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Dude, he's like, this work is way too important for me to spend time talking to you. I have to complete this. I know this is what God has for me. I'm not going to let you slow me down. Because if you build anything worth building, you'll attract critics worth ignoring. That's the truth. You'll attract people that might not believe in what you're doing, might try to talk you out of it, might say you're crazy for believing in that. But here's what's really tough about this and really sobering about this, is a lot of times critics don't even look like haters. Sometimes critics could be people close to you. Like for me, it's a great example. I knew I wanted to be in ministry when I was in high school going into college. My biggest doubters were my parents. They're like, Campbell, you're not going to make enough money. How are you going to provide for a family? This doesn't make sense to us. Are you sure? You know, my dad wanted me to get like a quote-unquote real degree. They didn't see it. And I was confident. I knew this is what God had for me. I had awesome people like Eric speaking in my life, Pastor Trey saying this is the right decision for you to make. And so I did it. And now here's the cool thing. My parents are probably two of my biggest supporters of what I do now. At one point they didn't see it. Now they do. You might have some people in your life who are critics, but they're family. They're friends. They're people you love and you trust their opinion. And they might not see the vision now, but maybe one day they will. And kind of one of the last encouraging pieces about pursuing your calling is, man, sometimes it can be hard. And you can be doing work that you're just like, man, I don't really see how God is in this work. But what I think is so encouraging is that God keeps receipts. We didn't talk about the specific chapter, but I want to mention it real quick. Nehemiah chapter 3, you can look at it yourself. It's literally just a list of people and all the jobs that they did when working on the city. And I want to show you this because I think this is incredible and really encouraging. It says, the dung gate was repaired by Milkah, son of Rechab, ruler of the district of Beth-Hikaram, right? He rebuilt it and put its doors with their bolts and bars in place. What the dung gate is, that was the city toilet. And so if God remembers who rebuilt the city toilet, surely he sees what you're doing right now. Surely he sees the work you're investing into your family. Like, dude, if you feel like your purpose and your calling is to raise a family that loves Jesus, dude, praise God. That's incredible. God sees you changing diapers. He sees you reading stories before bed. He sees you sacrificing so you can spend more time with your family. If you want to be the best volleyball player ever, dude, praise God. God can use that to do amazing things. God sees you working hard. God sees you late nights, cramming, studying. He sees you. Man, if he sees the dude who repaired the freaking toilet, he sees you. That's encouraging. I don't know about you. I think that's encouraging. So he sees the work that we're doing. And Jesus even talks about it hundreds of years later in Luke 16. He says, whoever can be trusted with little can also be trusted with much. So, man, if we're faithful with the small things, like repairing the city toilet, man, we can be faithful with the calling that God has for us. And that's how God knows he can trust us. But, man, it can be so hard. Like, it can be so hard to not take control. And I've been feeling this recently. Like, last couple of months have been tough, and, like, I felt pressure to take control because stuff doesn't really look like I thought it would. But about a month ago, I got the opportunity to go to Wyoming, which was awesome. And I traveled to Wyoming with some of my best friends, and we went to this foundation called Refuge, where church leaders and nonprofit leaders can go and just spend some time away, unplugged. They cook everything for you, just hang out. Like, the only requirement every day is you go to dinner. Like, it was awesome. And while we were there, we're in Wyoming, and so there's a lot of stuff to do, right? There's, like, we went fly fishing, which was super fun. Like, we got to, you know, just play different games around this ranch that they have. Got to see some awesome scenery. And one of the activities that they had was horse riding. And I hadn't ridden a horse in 20 years and honestly didn't plan on riding another horse anytime soon. But my friends really wanted to do it, and I thought maybe a picture would be dope. And so I was like, okay, I'll try it. And so I get on a horse. I'm wearing my Bob shirt from Camp Bob Cooper, and this is my horse. So this is Ricky Bobby. That's his name. And so Ricky Bobby was a horse that they had, and they didn't tell me this until I was on the horse already, but he's the most rebellious horse that they have. Yeah, and they were like, yep, that's your horse, which is funny because my personality is kind of like that, so we were a funny match. But so my guy Ricky Bobby, and man, as soon as we started, he was like testing me, you know, seeing like how much he could get away with. So we started like walking off the trail because we're like walking in a line. He started trying to like eat the grass and like holding up everybody behind us. But I started to kind of figure it out. And so we get to the top right here and see this awesome view. Like, dude, it's incredible, beautiful. We're hanging out. You see the scenery. There's some like wild horses. Like, it was like majestic, right? But after this, we started to go towards this cliff, and the trail goes to about a 20-foot drop at this incline, and then levels out for 5 feet, and then 20 feet back up. And so I'm like, oh, dude, here we go. About to get thrown off a horse again. This time I'm 26 and could actually get hurt. Body's starting to fall apart. And so I'm on the horse. I'm on Ricky Bobby, and I'm like, dude, you know what? I'm just not going to think about it too much, whatever. And we start to walk down a little bit, and I start to feel myself get nervous. And I get a little PTSD of my grandpa's horse throwing me off. And then I think of something that our guide told us. We had a guide, and she was awesome and super experienced with horses. And before we left, she said, the horse is trained to protect its rider. Its main purpose in life is to keep its rider safe. And so the best thing you could do is let the horse take care of you. And I was like, whoo, man. Because, man, I know God created me to be taken care of by him, and I know the safest thing for me is to trust him. But, man, I didn't feel that in that moment. Man, until I got on that horse, and I'm 20 feet looking down, and I'm saying, man, I think the safest thing for me to do is to trust Ricky Bobby to take me where I need to go. And he did. He took me down. He did jump at the bottom, which kind of scared me, but I think he was messing with me. So he, like, jumps and then goes back up. But I felt it, and I felt it in my body. I'm like, man, this is what I've been holding back from God. Like, the safest thing I can do is to trust God with my calling and purpose. And I haven't been doing that because I felt like I need to take control because it doesn't look like I thought it would. But I was literally created to be taken care of by God. So the safest thing I can do for me in my future is to trust him. Again, we don't have to manufacture what God is building. That's really the core of this. So, man, as we, you know, head out today, I think there's a couple of different things we can think about when responding. You know, I think the first one is maybe you don't know what your purpose is, don't know where you're headed. I think a great question to ask yourself is, man, what breaks your heart? What is something that breaks your heart that you can do something about? For me, what breaks my heart is I want young people to know that there is a different way to live life, and there's an organization called the church that loves them. That's what I'm passionate about. So I could do a million different jobs. I could work anywhere in the world. As long as it opens me up to do that, I know I'm in the right place. And so what is that for you? It could be, like I said, maybe your main motivation in life is to raise a family that loves Jesus. Man, do whatever you can to do that. Maybe it is, whatever it is for you, maybe it's to get into college, to get into a certain school, get a certain GPA, whatever. That's great. You know, do whatever you need to do that. And I think maybe the second thing we can kind of process is like, what in our life are we trying to take the reins on that we need to trust God with? Because again, that's the safest thing we can do, is to trust Him to take care of us and take us where we need to go. So we got to trust Him, even when it gets hard. So again, think about this week. What breaks your heart? And what areas are you not trusting God in and need to trust Him a little bit more? I'm going to pray. We'll have some response time. Please spend that time thinking and praying about what you're responding about. And then the team's going to come up. So y'all pray with me. Jesus, thank you so much for today. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come together and safely gather and learn and talk more about you. Father, thank you so much that you've created a space for us to be honest about what we're feeling. Father, thank you that the safest thing we can do is to trust you. Would you help us trust you when our instinct is to hold on to the reins? Would you help us see you as the safest and best place to put our faith in and trust that you're going to take care of us? Would you be with us this week? Would you bring clarity where we need to understand what direction we need to head in and need to understand what we need to let go of? Father, would you give us the strength to do that? We're so grateful for you, so grateful for everything you're doing this summer. I ask that you be with us and keep us safe. We love you and pray all this in your name. Amen.